This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Scientists are people. There's no getting around that. There are protocols and systems to make sure personal beliefs don't unduly influence scientific results. But sometimes personal and professional lives collide or overlap in important ways, and that's not always bad. Here's one example. Edwin Kim is an allergy researcher. He leads the Food Allergy Initiative at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and he's working to develop therapies for peanut allergies. As luck would have it, he also has a young son with a peanut allergy, and he recently wrote about how those parts of his life are intertwined in a piece for theconversation.com. Edwin, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What first got you professionally interested in food allergies and peanut allergies specifically? I mean, this interest and your research predates having a child with an allergy.
That's right. So really, the interest actually started way back when I was younger, and my younger brother actually grew up with allergic diseases, including asthma and milk allergy, which he quickly outgrew. But it was something that had stuck out in my mind of, you know, what was actually happening to him. It kind of got buried in the back of my mind, and then it didn't really pop back out until I was actually in medical school when I happened to be doing a rotation at the Duke University Medical Center, where I had met Wesley Burks. And Wesley Burks is a world-renowned food allergist, and that's where I really started to understand how something as simple as food that should be, you know, just this benign thing that we have social events around could actually cause these scary anaphylactic reactions in people.
Hmm. Well, Edwin Kim, you were studying and working on peanut allergy therapies. You had a young son, and you maybe had an inside track on kind of the leading edge of what would the best advice be. So what was that first time that your son had peanut butter like?
Well, so being the allergist and being the one studying peanut allergy, I was very well aware of what we were doing, introducing peanut. We actually had a bottle of Benadryl sitting on the side, hopefully trying to Wow. ward off evil spirits. And we gave him a little bit of peanut butter on a piece of toast. And, you know, almost immediately he started turning red all around his mouth. And again, I knew exactly what it was, although, of course, I was in denial. And so I tried to just, you know, get him cleaned up and got him some Benadryl. It happened to be right there, and just waited and watched. And it was a surreal moment because it's something that I had been doing not only in clinic, but in research almost on a daily basis. And then to suddenly see it at our own dining room table in the house was just, again, something that I don't know that I fully could accept at the moment. Unfortunately, then the reaction continued to progress, where then he ended up having a head-to-toe rash, what we call hives, as well as then vomited a few times, and then ultimately had breathing problems where he was repeatedly coughing. And so really sort of the whole gambit of symptoms that we're constantly telling our patients to look out for, he kind of had all in one reaction. And then, of course, ultimately we ended up going to see the doctor, and he got epinephrine in an injection. And sure enough, like all the other patients, everything went away magically. But again, for those couple of hours of just watching that whole thing unfold was something that just it sticks out in my mind even to this day.
Yeah, a dose of empathy and maybe motivation for your work.
Oh, absolutely.
So Edwin Kim, you are involved in work trying to develop therapies for peanut allergies, ways to actually for people who have a severe peanut allergy, the idea being to gradually introduce a tiny bit of peanut into their systems until their immune system can learn to not overreact to that. And there's one option that's currently available that's based on peanut flour. How does that therapy work, and how much evidence do we have that it does work?
Yeah, so the concept actually is very similar to what a lot of people may be familiar with in allergy shots, where we give small amounts of the actual sort of outdoor allergens or pollens in order to desensitize or make patients less reactive and have less symptoms. But what we found for food was trying to do it in an injection form just had so many side effects that it just wasn't something that we could reliably do. And so really, investigators like Dr. Burks, who I'd mentioned earlier, decided that perhaps maybe eating it, so in an oral form, since that's the way food is normally taken, could take advantage of some of the aspects of the immune system to be able to have the same idea, the same concept of small increasing amounts of what you're allergic to actually work. And so conveniently, after I mentioned that I had met Dr. Burks early in my career, and I happened to be able to fall into his lab And I've been working with them really ever since 2008. And so we were part of these early studies of again, small increasing amounts of peanut flour that if done in the right way, I see it as being enough that your immune system can see it, but not so much that you have an outward reaction. And you just slowly step that up to get them to a point where they're regularly eating peanut but not having any outward symptoms.
Wow. And so does that mean that the allergy is essentially gone? Does it cure the allergy or just make it something that is less threatening to people with a peanut allergy?
Yeah, so at this moment, it doesn't seem to be a cure, and we still need to do more work to understand what the long-term sort of benefits of this are, but everything seems to be pointing towards not a cure. But at the same time, it does seem to be very effective in trying to make a patient less reactive. So if that person who's eating this peanut treatment were to go to a restaurant and not realize that there was peanut in that meal that they had had, whereas in the past that might have caused a reaction or even a severe reaction, in this case, hopefully making them not reactive at all.
At least in the case of a child like your own, being able to sit at the same table with another kid who's eating a peanut butter sandwich without worrying that that could be life-threatening.
Yes, I mean, that would be wonderful. And a story I'll quickly tell is I went to lunch with my son on the very first day. And for probably the few weeks, if not month before, all I kept training him on was to not share food and just eat what we sent him. So what happens on the very first day of school? All the kids are sharing their food. And so that, you know, that kind of concept, because, you know, I do, you know, you do what you can to try to control your environment, but it's not perfect. You just can't control everything as much as you'd like to. And so something like these treatments hopefully can just sort of protect against those experiences that, again, may be outside of what you can control.
Well, Edwin Kim, you mentioned treatments. There's the peanut flour that is taken orally. There's also now a peanut patch. How effective is that compared to actually eating a peanut product as a therapy?
Yeah, so the peanut patch is exciting in that it is so, so simple to do. It really is literally a sticker that you just put on the kid's back. And in that way, it's actually seeping a little bit of peanut into the skin to the immune system. So still trying to make the same changes to the immune system that the peanut flour may have, but not ever having to go through the mouth where they may be, you know, concerned for taste or texture or anything else like that. At this point in the studies we've seen, there's been some benefit there, but after 1 year treatment, it's unclear sort of how much protection people are getting from there. So it's going to be important to continue to see where this research goes and whether additional years of treatment can continue to push how much protection that people get. And then I also think what's really, really important is going to be to find a way that we can predict who those ones are that are going to do well for it. But again, I think the convenience factor of the patch, as well as what the early signs of it being a very, very safe treatment, are going to be really, really attractive to people. And so just, again, finding ways to further improve the benefit from it and then to prove it as well are going to be essential.
Well, Edwin Kim, as a researcher, you, as you've said, collaborate with some of the people who are developing these therapies, and you also consult with some of the companies that are working on them. And then you yourself are working on developing yet another potential therapy. And these are peanut drops that are actually placed under the tongue. Where is that work in its development stage, and how effective does that look as an option?
Yeah, we're very, very excited about this. So the treatment is called sublingual immunotherapy. So again, the idea is rather than in a sticker form and rather than eating the food into your stomach, this is actually peanut extract that is held under the tongue and absorbed there, and that's how it gets to the immune system. And it seems to be, by being able to directly access the immune system there, we're able to get away with using a lot smaller dose than perhaps if you had to eat it. Mm. And from that, it seems to have a better safety signal. We have kids who complain of some itching in the mouth after the treatment, but it goes away on its own within, say, 10 to 15 minutes and really doesn't progress into anything more severe than that. As far as the amount of protection, from what we've seen there, kids are getting anywhere from 10 to 15 to even 20 times the amount of peanut that it might take to have an accidental ingestion or reaction in a restaurant or something else like that. So it doesn't seem to have quite the massive amount of protection that the peanut flour may have, but still seems to be more than enough to protect against some of those, again, uncontrolled exposures that may happen out there in the wild. And then again, not quite as easy to do as putting a sticker on the pack, but a few drops under the tongue held for a couple minutes and then, you know, on with your day it's not too bad either. So if you really see it as sort of finding its kind of self in the middle, a balance of convenience and safety as well as efficacy.
Are these therapies available to patients now, or are they still in the laboratory or clinical trial phase?
Unfortunately, all three of the treatments that I mentioned are still in the research phase. The peanut flour, of course, has just recently gone through an advisory committee from the FDA and is sort of in their arena right now. I think everyone in the food allergy world is hoping for a positive decision there, but we'll have to wait and see. The peanut patch is also sitting at the FDA as well. And so, again, we're equally optimistic there because I do think it's vitally important for patients to be able to have choice. And then the sublingual that we're doing right now, unfortunately, still it's a step behind when it comes to sort of development. So we've shown over a couple of our own internal studies, as well as a couple of other larger studies that have been done, that it can be effective. But really, we need to be able to sort of take it to that next level and have that larger study across multiple centers, maybe even across multiple countries, to be able to show that this is not sort of a fluke that we have found at a single center, but yes, this really does have the potential that these smaller studies show. And then that would be really exciting, where patients could have multiple options depending on sort of their stage of life or their lifestyles about what might make the most sense for their child.
Given how much advice about when and how to introduce potentially allergenic foods to kids has changed and how much our understanding of these allergies has changed, what's the current state of advice to parents about peanuts?
Unfortunately, I think it's still been unclear. And we've had lots and lots of pregnant moms or moms who have delivered and are breastfeeding ask the question of exposure to them. So if they're eating while they're pregnant or if they're eating while they're breastfeeding, what does that do to my child? Does that potentially protect them because it's exposing them early, or does it set them up to become allergic? And unfortunately, at this point, I think the research is still not clear. We do have some of these larger cohorts, birth cohorts, that are happening actually across the globe, one of the best ones in Australia, trying to help us to understand a little bit more about what are the risk factors that are going to cause people to become allergic or, again, potentially protect them. But we're at a stage now where we don't have a great answer. And I know it's very, very frustrating for pregnant moms as well as just families alike. And so our advice is quite wimpy at this point, but it seems to be mostly in moderation at this point until we know better.
Edwin Kim is an assistant professor of medicine and pediatrics and director of the UNC Food Allergy Initiative at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.